So, hey everybody, it's Tuesday, 4 o'clock. That means I know where I have to be, which is at KPFK, 90.7 FM in Los Angeles, 98.7 FM in Santa Barbara, and streaming live on the web at kpfk.org, and also receiving tweets, I barely know how to speak it, at Eric Mann Speaks. And going on our website, Eric at voicesfromthefrontlines.com, which means I must be a guy named Eric. So this is Eric Mann, the host of Voices from the Frontlines. And today we have a very important show. We always have a very important show, but one is the denial of voting rights to college students in the state of Tennessee. Okay, so our first guest is John Sherman with the Fair Elections Legal Network, who's helped bring the suit in federal court, along with Barrett, Johnson, Martin, and Garrison. Great to have you on the show. How are you doing?
Hi, how's it going? Thanks for having me on.
Well, I think what's interesting about this is that the fight for voting rights is very, very hard, and some people think it exists in just this broad strokes, and yet lawsuits are often brought on very particular, finite, even technical grounds, which is some of the context in which, of course, the other side denies voting rights. So we have to have a context to fight for voting rights. I'm going to come in later, John, about asking you about the whole limits of these voter ID laws. But why don't you explain to our listeners what you brought the suit about, what the violation of civil rights was about students, obviously the use of student IDs that were denied by the state of Tennessee as a valid form of identification for voting. Is that correct?
Yes. So the photo ID requirement for voting in Tennessee lists out a few options, state IDs, driver's licenses, military IDs, but the law expressly singles out student ID cards and says they cannot be used at the polls. It does this even while faculty and staff ID cards from public colleges and universities can be used. That's blatant discrimination on the basis of age. And they've made it easier for older voters to cast their ballots because absentee voting is allowed only by excuse in Tennessee, and you can vote absentee simply if you're age 60 and up in Tennessee. They added public sector retiree ID cards to the list of acceptable IDs, but in each instance that they've been presented with a bill to add student ID cards, they've rejected it countless times. So we brought suit under the 26th Amendment, which prohibits age discrimination, and we also think that it violates students' fundamental rights under the Equal Protection Clause.
Well, let me ask you this, John. I mean, one of the things that is, from the point of view of Voices from the Front Lines, is in a racist society, everything is racist. So we're a civil rights radio show, a black liberation radio show, or a revolutionary radio show. It's obviously, as we would say, not an accident that the Nashville Student Organizing Committee and a group of nine students from Fisk University and Tennessee State University, both historically black colleges, filed the lawsuit that I'm assuming you represented them in. Now, talk about we'll get to the age in a minute, but since we know this is significantly about race, how do you explain legally the violation of the 14th Amendment? Not to us, but how do you explain it to a court?
Let's put it this way. You know, the suit is obviously on behalf of all students in the state of Tennessee, but the National Student Organizing Committee, they very much do see themselves in the tradition of civil rights demonstrators from the 60s and 70s. And, you know, there's a lot of history in Nashville. Some of the first sit-ins in the country were staged in Nashville. Some of the first organizers who went over to Selma for the voting rights marches and to do organizing around voter registration, they came out of Fisk University, like Bernard Lafayette, who played a very early role in Selma in 1962 and was instrumental in sort of setting up the 65 march. The context of voter ID around the country, you wouldn't have to be a rocket scientist to figure out what's gone on in 2008 and 2012 in both of those presidential elections. We saw overwhelming turnout from minority and student voters around the country. And the reaction has been directed at that. We had only two strict photo ID laws prior to 2008, and those were Georgia and Indiana. After 2008, with that record turnout for minority and student voters, we saw many, many more of these laws passed. And today, after the April 7th election in Wisconsin, in which the Wisconsin photo ID law is not going to be enforced, but after that point it will be, there will be 10 such strict photo ID laws in the country. And people, you know, have brought Voting Rights Act suits in a number of these states, and whether they win or lose, they have been able to demonstrate a discriminatory impact on African American and Latino voters around the country.
Since we know that in terms of, I mean, as you said, the core of the denial of voting rights is the core of denial, first of all, of black voting rights, and then secondly, even structured into the system around undocumentation, is the denial of Latino voting rights. But let's still go back to the fact that the Labor Community Strategy Center brought a major federal suit against the Los Angeles Metropolitan Transportation Authority, accusing them of setting up a separate and unequal transportation system in Los Angeles and violating Title VI of the 1964 Civil Rights Act. Back then, we did not have to prove, of course, intentional discrimination. We proved disparate impact. And also, the courts, the Sandoval decision, was partly done because of the tremendous victory of our lawsuit. So we know a lot about civil rights law in the very great traditions of civil rights law. And we also know that they always, just as they're trying to restrict access to the vote, they're trying to restrict access to the remedies and to the grounds on which you can bring civil rights lawsuits.
Right.
So tell us something about what are some of the hurdles that you're trying to address in terms of not just changes in the student ID process, but the laws themselves that you're trying to bring the case based on?
Right. So we have to be very creative these days in the voting rights community, because it's getting harder and harder to challenge these requirements. As many of your listeners probably know, in 2013, there was a Supreme Court decision called Shelby County, came out of Alabama, and that led to the striking down of a major provision of the Voting Rights Act, which required certain states, many of them southern states, to pre-approve all of their voting changes with the Department of Justice or in a federal court. Without that provision in place, now it's on civil rights groups to go out there, and we only have another section of the provision that applies, another section of the Voting Rights Act that applies nationwide, but it's much more labor-intensive, and the burden is on us to prove discriminatory intent or discriminatory impact. So we have to be creative. In this case, we're focused on student IDs. We're not, it's not an endeavor to strike down the law as a whole. We are trying to ensure that students themselves can cast their ballots and use their student ID cards at the polls instead of having to go down to a DMV office and present five different forms of proof of birth, proof of identity, proof of residency. Their ID is good enough to verify that their name and photo match the voter that shows up at the polls. And there's a lot of creative lawsuits going on out there that are going to sort of struggle to figure out where the law can go on this and what the landscape will look like 5-10 years down the road. But so far, there's been three suits out there that have struck down voter ID laws. All of them have been under state constitutions in Pennsylvania, Missouri, and in Arkansas. The one case out there that's different that has resulted in a good judgment under the U.S. Constitution is the Texas case. Texas's voter ID law was struck down under the U.S. Constitution and the Voting Rights Act, and the judge there actually found intentional discrimination on the basis of race. That case is on appeal to the United States Court of Appeals for the Fifth Circuit, so we'll have to see what happens there.
Well, that is very exciting. The voice you hear is John Sherman with the Fair Elections Legal Network. I think one of the interesting things about, from the civil rights movement's point of view, is that the constant bringing of suits, I still think, is great. I never think it's the front lines of the movement, but it's a critical tactical fight because, and I don't mean it to be cute, but it's not simply whether or not they accept or deny it, but I think it's very important that these legal cases are trying to bring a moral case as well as a legal case, which forces the system to decide. so that it's not true, did you, quote, win or lose the case. Of course you want the remedy, but I think bringing this case got you on Voices from the Front Lines and got the students more attention. So how are people using this case as we're waiting for the, well, let me slow down. Walk me through now what stage the case is actually in, and then secondly, let's talk about how the case is contributing to a discussion about voting rights in a broader context.
I think that's a great question. So we're very early days in the litigation. We just filed at the beginning of March, and we're waiting for what will likely be a motion to dismiss from the state, and then we'll, you know, work through that, you know, and discovery will proceed after that. So assuming we survive the motion to dismiss. The case, you know, I think is reinvigorating a conversation around student voting rights and the particular burdens that students face in casting their ballots. And the 26th Amendment itself, you know, which most people think of as just having lowered the age for voting from 21 to 18, actually prohibits age discrimination. And in Tennessee and North Carolina, there are now these creative suits to try to see if we can figure out how to prove up age discrimination in the voter ID context. But what I will say is, you know, part of, and you suggested this with your question, part of the good in bringing this suit is to deter other states from trying to discriminate against students. Right now, there are, once Wisconsin's voter ID law goes into effect, there will be 10 strict photo ID states. 7 of those 10, though, accept student IDs. Mississippi, Alabama, Virginia, Kansas, Georgia, Indiana, and Wisconsin. It's not very often that voting rights advocates get to say, hey, just do what Mississippi and Alabama have done and accept student IDs.
Right.
But Texas, South Carolina, and Tennessee think they're unique and that they have carte blanche to discriminate against students. So we're very proud that, you know, the Nashville Student Organizing Committee, we're proud to be representing them, and we're proud that they've been fighting against this law for as long as they have.
And, of course, it was a great double entendre about carte blanche, since these are white people using the white card. So tell us about yourself a little bit. What got you involved in this? And tell us about your own, the Fair Elections Legal Network. We think it's very important about people forming organizations, building organizations. So tell us a little bit about your own organization and your own trajectory. How'd you get there?
Sure. So the Fair Elections Legal Network is a nonprofit, nonpartisan organization in D.C. We focus a lot on election reform. We counsel groups based in the states on different voting issues that come up. And then, you know, we have a campus vote project that's specifically focused on student voter engagement. We have a lot of materials for students and also for administrators at colleges so that they can engage their students more. That's at campusvoteproject.org. And this sort of grew out of our work in the states. You know, this grew out of our revision of a guide that focuses on Tennessee student voting. And we noticed that faculty and staff could use their ID cards from public institutions. They could use those to vote, but students couldn't use their IDs. My own background is, you know, I've been doing voting rights for a while now, but previously with the ACLU Voting Rights Project in Atlanta, Georgia. I litigated some other suits around voter suppression. And, you know, today, you know, we're bringing a new sort of generation of these suits here at Fair Elections Legal Network and trying to move the needle on the issue, as difficult as it is these days.
Well, the listeners, you're listening to John Sherman with the Fair Elections Legal Network. You're listening to Eric Mann on Voices from the Frontlines, www.voicesfromthefrontlines.com. And I would like to see if you could tweet me some questions at Eric Mann Speaks, either because we know where the show is going about voting rights in Tennessee. So for those of you who know what Twitter is, tweet me at Eric Mann Speaks. And I would be happy to both read your question on the air or comment and have us comment on it. Now, going back, John, is that we always ask the question, what can people do? We're trying to build on Voices, and I'll talk to you off the air. We're trying to also build Voices into what we call your national movement building show, because we have the chance to get this show syndicated and get on other stations so that when there's something like this struggle, we can build over time a network of organizers and activists who are listening to the radio, not even primarily for entertainment or even critique, but because they want to do something.
Right.
So the question would be, if people wanted to help this movement, what options exist? Obviously, one is getting you on the show and really getting the word out, but how would they reach the groups, and what are people asking them to do?
It's a great question, you know, and particularly because a lot of people think that a lawsuit, you know, is just created by lawyers and they go into court and you get something done or not done. But it's half activism and half lawyering, and as much activism as lawyering. So the pressing need for us is to identify more affected students in Tennessee. If someone listening to the show knows of a student in Tennessee who, for instance, only has an out-of-state ID card and just their student ID, that student can't vote in Tennessee, cannot vote even by absentee. So we would, you know, hope that we could get in touch with that student. That student's story can be powerful, can be evidence, at least in this lawsuit, or they can serve as a plaintiff. And just learning more about instances in which students in Tennessee were denied the right to vote because they only had their student ID card, that kind of information. You know, you go to law school and you read a lot of cases, but, you know, legal research is just 10-15% of what you do in a case. In winning something like a civil rights case like this, everything is about fighting for every last shred of evidence and proving up every fact in court. And we rely on people on the ground to help us in that regard.
Absolutely. You know, in the case that we brought, I mean, one of the great things is we initiated the suit ourselves at the Strategy Center, but we reached out to the NAACP Legal Defense and Educational Fund, who did an amazing job. So we won the case, so that put us into a position of being, it led to a negotiated settlement, a consent decree, which led to 10 years of being the class representative of 500,000 bus riders and engaging in almost daily struggle with the MTA, after which every disagreement essentially would go back to a special master, which in return went back to the Ninth Circuit and even went to the Supreme Court.
Wow.
As these wonderful Western and Northern liberals, when they lose, they become advocates of states' rights and go to the court and attack the federal courts for having too much jurisdiction. So in terms of this, in terms of our life on websites, how do we reach your organization, Fair Elections Legal Network? How would we find out about you?
So fairelectionsnetwork.com, minus the legal, is our website. Campusvoteproject.org is the sort of sister website for the project that we run for student civic engagement. I'll give you, you know, my number straight here on the air, 202-248-5346. If you know someone who's a student in Tennessee and they've had problems voting, we want to speak to them. Even if that person hasn't had problems voting, but they think they might be able to find other students who have had problems voting and don't have an ID card they can use to vote, we want to talk to that person if they're sufficiently motivated to help us out. So that's the best way to reach us.
And tell us about the National Student Organizing Committee. Do you happen to have their information in front of you? I should have gotten it myself, but people can go online. But do you know how to reach them? And how are they putting out the word?
So they've been organizing around this issue for quite some time. They organize around a variety of social justice issues. They lobby for different legislation. We're representing a number of them in the lawsuit and the organization as a whole. They have a website that describes some of their activities. And, you know, they're purely student-run. They make all their decisions internally and are just, you know, very much in the model of the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee from the 60s. On this particular issue, obviously, there's sensitivities with the litigation. So we haven't put them out front, you know, because we want them to be able to testify, you know, for the first time in their depositions and at trial.
Well, that's great, John. Very nice to have you on the show. I mean, I worked with the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee and with the Congress of Racial Equality. So thanks for the great work you're doing. This is an important case. Thanks for making yourself available to be on Voices from the Frontlines. Again, folks, if you want to tweet me at Eric Mann Speaks, I'll be happy to read any comments or questions. So take good care of yourself, John. We'll stay in touch with you. And as I say, keep the struggle going.
Thank you so much for having us on.
Okay.